Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Post Acute Point of View podcast, our discussion hub for healthcare technology in the out-of-hospital space. Here, we talk about the latest news and views on trends and innovations that can impact the way post-acute care providers work. We'll also dive into how technology can make a difference in today's changing healthcare landscape for home and facility-based workers and the people they care for. Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into Coordinating the Ecosystem, Navigating the Post-Acute Patient Journey. I'm McKnight's Long-Term Care News Executive Editor, Jim Berkland, and I'm your moderator today for what is going to be a fascinating discussion. We're going to weave in and out of the relationships and challenges skilled nursing providers have when working with home health providers and equipment suppliers, and really get into how to prevent communication breakdowns and all the ripple effects that can affect patient outcomes. It's more important than ever to be connected throughout transitions of care, as we all know, so this is a great place to be today. We have four experts from the overlapping spaces we'll be talking about, so there's going to be quite a few good takeaways coming your way. Now, I'd like you to meet our presenters. Chris Lukesic is formerly trained as a registered nurse and is director of clinical informatics with Saber Healthcare Group. With more than 20 years of experience in long-term care and a decade in various acute care settings, Chris has been deeply intertwined with software and technology, serving things like clinical informatics and reimbursement systems. Tana Wright is a veteran professional dealing with durable medical equipment and supervisor of the intake department at Northwest Respiratory Services. She's been involved with care and supply issues concerning respiratory care. Dania Fallstrom also is with Northwest Respiratory Services as revenue cycle manager. With more than 20 years of experience, she specializes in dealing with long-term care medical equipment and supply issues and has developed deep expertise in revenue cycle management and billing issues. Finally, we have Chris Puglisi, the head of interoperability for residential care software with ResMed, the parent company of Matrix Care. Chris's strength is quite directly enabling technology, especially as it pertains to post-acute care matters. So what all this means, folks, is we're in very good hands today. So let's dive right in. Chris, is it fair to say that there are a lot of opportunities, and I guess we have to also say potential pitfalls, when you look at interoperability matters in long-term care, especially when it comes to home care matters?
Absolutely. It's one of the areas that there are a few solutions for and lots of opportunities to improve your operation, improve patient care that can present itself with the interest and willingness to deploy new services and technologies to support it.
Sounds like a great jumping off point.
Excellent. Thanks, Jim. Okay, so today we're going to cover three key things. To start out with, we're going to overview some challenges and areas that post-acute providers face every day when trying to coordinate with each other and with other providers in the broader ecosystem. We'll explore the inner workings of an HME organization, which I believe is generally unfamiliar to a lot of boots on the ground folks in a nursing facility. And then we'll open it up to a larger discussion with our variety of experts in different disciplines to talk through how these coordinations happen in real time, what technologies are deployed, both business and care operations are deployed around them. So let's get right into it. As Jim mentioned, I head up the interoperability organization for ResMed's residential care services or software. That includes an organization called Brighttree, which helps manage HME operations. Our organization has a wide understanding and a wide customer base serving all sorts of different parts of healthcare. We know from various areas of research and focus groups with our different organizations, there is a significant amount of overlap. It varies in terms of importance based on different focuses of a given HME provider or the specialty of a given facility. But there is near constant interaction between, you know, HME providers and the rest of the post-acute care space, largely acting as the facilitator, right? You could call an HME provider a operational grease that helps keep things turn. So our understanding of these challenges are very specific, and we have lots of really interesting information to share, and we'll talk a lot through that with our guests today a little bit later. But to highlight some of the overall challenges that post-acute providers face as a whole, and this is for all the provider sets that we're talking about today, HMEs, nursing, skilled nursing providers, other facility-based care providers in communities, home health and hospice, palliative care, a heavy reliance on referrals that are coming from an ongoing source of approval order. There's also something that doesn't really occur the same way because of the decentralized nature of post-acute care, which I refer to as parallel care, where we have different providers providing services at the same time, each with their own mandate under their given provider number, their own billing that may be going through, different responsibilities to balance. And that's especially true when you look at a skilled nursing organization and an HME and a home health provider. As you're preparing to discharge someone to home, often there's devices and other equipment that may need to be ordered. They're not going to leave your building if there's things that you own. And that all has to be coordinated. And right now, that's all coordinated in parallel and fulfilled in parallel, not necessarily aligned as each organization goes through and executes. And then lastly, tech and policy that's intended for acute care. And this is something that we've talked about in other instances of this series with McKnight's and other publications that we put out ourselves. There is a disconnect between the technology prescriptions that are coming from at a policy level and what a post-acute organization would actually need. And I'll give you a very great example here. So I think everyone has probably heard of the Cures Act, and some of the big things that came out of the Cures Act were new terms like information blocking. Now, information blocking is something specifically that governs the release of information to HIPAA-covered entities when it's requested and necessary. Generally, information blocking is more of a enforcement measure to existing rule. You're supposed to be disclosing information to providers that have a relevant reason to work with it, to patients, to payers when it's needed. But in the case of information blocking in the Cures Act, it referred to a technology prescription. However, as great as that technology prescription was, it forgets the relationship that post-acute providers have with their referral sources. And so even if you're having trouble getting all the documentation you need from a hospital, and it's a chronic problem where patients are showing up on a Friday evening with no paperwork and nothing you can do to kind of gather more than scan 1,000 different portals, you're not necessarily going to go and report this organization that is sending patients to your buildings for information blocking. So a prescribed technology or prescribed policy solution that doesn't necessarily fit the reality of a post-acute provider. There are certainly benefits and things that are growing. We've talked a lot in other instances on TEFCA, which is the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement. It's a nationwide structure or governance model for how to exchange information between different information networks. And that has a lot of opportunity to bring post-acute providers into the same space on an even footing with all the acute care and ambulatory care and other providers that have had more incentive financially and otherwise to adopt certain technologies like this. So in general, because of these relationships, post-acute is different than the kind of interoperability challenges that get solved and addressed in some of the acute and ambulatory spaces. Now, as you guys might expect, when we talk about the challenges getting referrals in, there's lots of solutions that have jumped up to help solve referral management problems. Many of you might be familiar with them because it's what your hospital wants you to use. There's health information exchanges that your states run that may be providing some services to help transition information or make more information available. There's various portals that you can log into to retrieve discharge documents, whatever you might need to equip your teams with the right information to both support the operation as well as support the care that's being delivered. However, when you get down into specifically the coordination between post-acute providers, you don't see nearly as many tech solutions, capabilities to solve these problems being rolled out. Simplify what I just said and repeat it. There's a lot of investment being made about in getting information from a hospital to the network of post-acute providers that may be providing care for a patient once they leave the four walls of the hospital, but not as much investment in supporting the coordination between those different entities. And there's lots of reasons for that. One of the big challenges that some organizations face, varying operating models. In facility-based care, it's certainly changing rapidly, especially with staffing challenges. But traditionally, the building itself is fairly self-operating in that you might have a member of an intake team that runs your intake operation for the building, and they run in that building. And the same thing applies for all the buildings that you might operate if you're operating more than one, where you've got a kind of a localized operation for each building. In the home health and in the HME space, it's much more common to see a more centralized model because there is no building where patients are. They are distributed out into the communities in their homes, and that's where the HME providers and their techs are going to deliver and train with different devices, or the home health nurses and other clinicians are going when they're providing their services after a person leaves a facility. you as a home health provider or an HME provider may be working with one facility, but working with one facility may be different than working with the other one over, even using the same software or even working under or operated by the same company. The second area that's a significant challenge is a lot of these things are ad hoc. They're phone and fax heavy by their nature. When someone needs oxygen in one of your buildings, you're going to give them oxygen. You're not necessarily going to go through a whole electronic approval process with all the compliance fully fulfilled, like right then and there. Person's getting oxygen, order's going to get written, it's going to get off to the doctor to get signed. And it's going to take a little bit longer than just, a lot of these operations by their nature have become very phone and fax heavy, which makes it difficult to consistently build processes around under those varying operating models. And I know I'm getting a little bit into the philosophical here. By all means, put questions in the chat if we're moving. And then lastly here, we're talking about all these kind of operations, right? That where we know your teams are calling each other, faxing each other, getting clarification, calling back, all the kind of back and forth and go in with this kind of analog technology. There's no reimbursement for this. This is part of your operation. So it's all coming out of the limited numbers you're getting back as it is for under the current reimbursement models for most of these patients, which are going to be in Medicare programs. So put all these things together, and we've got a kind of a large challenge that can be solved, but we have big gaps and behavior changes in some cases that'll have to be overcome. So let's go to the next slide and just talk about what this looks like in practice. So we've got our physician in the hospital, and I made the nursing facility the circle in this diagram, but certainly the physician in the hospital is emanating to all of these different organizations, right? So if we were to make this diagram more complicated, there'd be arrows going all different directions coming from that physician or from the hospital, right? For whichever item they might need from the HME provider, whatever other orders or considerations for their care in the nursing facility or onwards to home, and all the ongoing changes in their care that may require a doctor's orders throughout. But in general, we're going to see transitions of care going to a skilled nursing facility. In the process, that patient may have specific wound needs where a wound-focused HME might be providing the wound kits. There may be oxygen required. Rentals, very common. If you're running out of stock, you might have a local HME partner that can provide you an extra bed of whatever kind you might need. And then as patients recover or become low enough acuity, they can go home. There usually are HME needs for a person going home that, again, falls on the skilled nursing facility to coordinate. And so there's a lot of back and forth. And a lot of these things, while we might see, as we talked about earlier in the presentation, we might see a lot more digital solutions solving for that top line going from physician hospital to skilled nursing. You see a significant drop in solutions and capabilities when we hit the other lines in this diagram, which is the challenge I think we all need to look to overcome as we move forward. And one of the biggest reasons to overcome that challenge, and this is, I don't have more numbers and diagrams as this is a new study, but one of the things we asked our participants in the study, which included thousands of different providers across different settings, what is one of the big areas of focus when you look to adopt interoperability technology, when you look to employ an interoperability strategy within your organization? And the two largest responses were operational efficiency and better care outcomes. So organizations are looking to make these arrows less of a burden on their operation. There's fewer people in some cases, or you're having trouble staffing, or just generally you'd like to grow your business without necessarily growing the administrative staff that could work more efficiently. Okay, now we're going to lead into our first part of our discussion. So I'd like to invite Tana and Daniel back. Excellent. So as I mentioned when we were going through in the beginning, I know when I first got involved working with Brightree that I was woefully ignorant of how an HME operates, and I'd spent a long time in home health before that. I think one area I'd like to start off with is really having Tana and Dania break down what their business is. And we'll get to specifically the segment of post-acute care you serve, but tell us just a little bit about how the average HME operate, since I know both of you have worked. And Tana, you can start with the intake, and Dania, you can get to the revenue cycle components.
Sure.
Okay.
So specifically, I'm just going to speak for NRS. We have 34 branches providing 1,100-ish nursing homes with their oxygen, their PAP, their trach, their suction, the wound care. And we also contract with 10,000 veterans as far as the intake portion goes. We just have one corporate office here that handles all 34 of those branches. So all the intake that comes in any new patients, new facilities, new anything, it all is worked through this EGAN branch here in Minnesota. The other 34 branches are made up of basically warehouses. So it's just where we are able to fill the trucks and deliver the oxygen to the patients. So that's the intake portion of it.
Okay. Thank you, Tana, for that. So I've been with Northwest about 10 years, and one thing we have to figure out yet is how to get the prescription back from the facility when they already have the oxygen. From Tana's perspective, she's getting faxed orders for the oxygen when they already have it in the patient room. So then we'll generally get like a fax cover sheet or an LTC form indicating oxygen, number of liters per minute, the doctor. A lot of times place PRN on that order, and a lot of times insurances won't cover if PRN is on the order. When they really do use it continuously, it's just the doctor puts it on there. Our job as a DME provider is to determine if we can bill insurance after that Part A stay ends. Once the Part A ends, Medicare won't cover in a facility, but the Medicaids generally will cover, but they all have different requirements as far as documentation goes. So in order to contract with these facilities to save them the money to bill third party, it gets difficult in obtaining that documentation when the facility already has our equipment. That's where Brightree or some of the different EMR systems would come in handy to be able to connect the two with the documentation piece. That way it's such a burden on not only the DME, but also the nursing home to then go gather the documentation after the setup has already been completed. So yeah. Once we have the documentation, then yes, we bill insurance, and then we go into all that back-end type revenue cycle stuff. But that's our main issue that we've been trying to solve for a number of years, is just to have the two connect to talk to each other.
And Tana, I think maybe just for the folks that are listening on the call may not be as familiar with HME. When you go through the compliance process, can you just give us an idea of the scale of variety that you have to jump through for each of these insurance providers for each of these devices, as you mentioned, that have already been deployed? Because I know it's highly variable, right?
Yes. So some won't accept PRN. Others want the SATs. They want chart notes. Some require a prior authorization. Some want to see the conch logs, number of hours patient has been on it. And as a provider that's not right there at the facility, because we service the upper Midwest chunk, it's difficult to go get conch log hours when we can't just walk down the road to grab them. And then you're also dealing with, like, nursing homes are, they have staff shortages. So it's just a lot of back and forth trying to obtain the different pieces of documentation that are required, because all the states don't operate the same way with what their requirements are.
That's great. So I've been to a couple of HMEs before, and just to kind of share with everybody, when we talk about oxygen tanks, and Tana mentioned the warehouses, right? So there's a central office. That's where it sounds like, Dania, as well, you work out of, since the revenue cycle is centralized as well. There is the satellite warehouses where most of the product is. And there might be either like a distribution hubs where that all distribute to these different warehouses, but those warehouses all get the orders or get their daily stock or their daily responsibility. In some cases, if it's a large enough operation, there might be a literal conveyor belt. And all the oxygen tanks usually have some form of numerical scanning or numbering to keep track of all of them so that you know which ones are being sent out, returned, cleaned and serviced, refilled again to go back out. So there's what I was always surprised about when I first started interacting with HMEs is how you have this kind of industrial process of boxing and shipping and distribution. And right next door or in some of these different offices, you might also have a clinical intake operation looking for clinical documents, very similar to what you might see in a skilled nursing operation. You've got techs and clinicians that are responsible for, you guys mentioned wound care, so you've probably got some wound techs that are there to help train with different devices and things like that, both family members as well as some nurses. You have this very interesting balance between those two things, between a clinical, a true clinical operation. You guys have NPIs just like anybody else, but the distribution is much more into a different kind of scale of industry than just services that we see inside of facilities or in home-based care. So let's talk a little bit more about the intake process. So you guys deliver oxygen tanks to different buildings. How are your techs working with those different buildings today?
So we have specific territories and facilities that they service. So each branch is scheduled to visit these facilities on a certain cadence. The cadence is dependent on the size of the facility, population of the facility. The larger the population, the more often they might visit it 2-3 times a week. The liquid facilities too, we would need to visit them more because we have to actually replenish the oxygen. It's more of a cadence that we go there. And then on top of that, it's any, so that they know when they're going to be visiting these facilities. But then on top of that, intake will also add on top of those deliveries, additional calls, additional orders for oxygen or whatnot that we get that they'll have to also provide in addition to what they're already doing.
Oh, so while the operation is like moving, you're calling mm-hmm. over to warehouses and saying, okay, we got another one for yep. Fair Oaks or whatever it might be.
Be on the road and they may have to come back. We do have runners. We do have certain drivers that will take care of these that I'm talking about, the ones that kind of get called in at the last minute, but that isn't always the case. So there's times where we just cross our fingers and hope that the drivers have what we need on the truck at that time. If not, they have to come back and grab it and go back out and provide the equipment that's needed.
And you guys use a workforce management tool to track the drivers? So you, for example, knew the guy was on the road or the person was on the road when you were calling over?
Yeah, and we generally call like dispatch. So it's not, we do call the drivers too. And the outer branches will call the drivers as well. So yeah, we can find out specifically where they are. Locally here, though, we just call our dispatch and they can, using GPS, they know where their drivers are at the time to see who might, it might make the most sense to deliver said equipment.
Yes. So that, it always brings up like another area of logistics. Even just pulling the things off the shelves, putting them in boxes if they need to be boxed. But then you got to get them on the truck, and the trucks have to have their optimized routes, as you described. There's orders coming in constantly, and they need XYZ. So you can't just say, we'll get it on the list for tomorrow.
No, we throw monkey wrenches in their machine all day long.
And so while Tana's throwing all those monkey wrenches into the machine, Donnie, what does that mean for reimbursement with those constant orders flying in from all different directions?
Multiple states with varying requirements, and then you have different facilities with different types of operational processes, and then drivers where it's the constant with oxygen and the tanks, delivering those to keep the supply closet filled on top of any add-ons for new setups or any equipment orders within the norm of event setup or outtrack or whatnot. They would have to provide that and the additional documentation training that goes with that. And then on top of it, sometimes we don't even know where our equipment is, because that serial number might get moved to a different patient. So on top of that, we also have to do the nursing home audits to make sure that whichever room it is has that correct serial number in it. There's a lot of moving balls going on all the time.
And that's for your rental items, right? Where a device might move from room to room. Yeah. Okay. Thank you both so much for that. I hope it was enlightening for everyone on the call. For the rest of the call, we're going to go through a larger discussion here. We're going to let Chris and Tana and Danya interact back and forth through these different areas that they're focused on in their different operations, but really how this patient journey comes together in real time with these different organizations. And so you've heard Tana and Danya reference it a couple times, but some of the challenges they're facing in working with nursing facilities, and I'm sure Chris and her staff have similar areas that they're trying to focus on and improve on with similar challenges facing them. So without any further ado, let's get right to the panel. And Chris, we're going to open it up to you. You heard a lot from Tana and Dania around the staffing challenges that different nursing facilities are facing. It makes it hard to build up processes. How have you seen building processes with post-acute providers, HME, home health, or otherwise, with that reality that you've got pretty frequent staff changes as well as this distributed model where some of these buildings are operating independently, some of them may be grouped to operate more centrally, but it's still fairly diverse in most organizations?
I think we're really trying to get to a more standardized solution in this. And if we can get a software to help bring this all together, I think that would be great. We're seeing that a lot more with the health information exchange. We're getting a lot of information from hospitals. We're not able to push a lot of that back yet. And we're not able to push it out to say DME, home care, hospice, and they're not able to send us stuff back. For instance, like one of the things we can do when someone's going home right now is we can send the discharge meds all over to their local pharmacy. So it would be great if we had that ability, as I'm listening to them talk, to send that, what they need, straight to them. I think it would be really great if we could automatically shoot that over to their system without having to go to the fax machine and getting stopped 20 times before you get there. And then we're just slowing everything down. If I get done with a meeting today and say, oh, Susie's going home in 2 days, I could get that process started right away through the system would be my dream. Now, I'm all about unicorns and rainbows. So usually these things don't happen quite that way. But I think that we can definitely move as a group together to get there because we're starting to get there with the hospital information. We just need to get further. So I don't know if that's what you were looking for, Chris, or...
No, that's great. I've got a couple of questions to throw back at you. You mentioned the health information exchanges. You're saying that you're not seeing home health providers or HME providers in those networks that you're starting to activate in your buildings?
No. So we're seeing most of the hospitals are participating, and we're having a lot of luck with dialysis centers. Even some say we send someone out for a cardiac visit or a pain visit. We are starting to get some of those things back. So if we could be integrated with something like that, I think that would help all of us. Or even if when we're doing our discharge summary in the system, if it could automatically, I say, I want this to go to ABC DME, could that referral go straight to them and then them send us, this is what we need. These are the forms that we need filled out. And can we get these signed electronically by the doctor and shot back over to us? Those would be the questions I would have with that. But that would be my dream.
I think that was a question back to Tana and Dania about.
Yeah, we definitely are able to accept electronic signatures. I think that is absolutely key. And that's what speaks to what you were talking about, too. Just a way to for us to communicate and automate those orders.
I think we have to do that also for good outcomes so that patients don't get sent back to the hospital because the oxygen doesn't get out there for a day after they've went home. Now, some of our people that might leave, they just come to me right now and say, hey, Chris, I'm leaving at 4 o'clock today, the better for all of us. And I think that's where I see this going, and I have high hopes that it's going to go that way. I'm already seeing it in different aspects of it. I just think it needs to be fine-tuned by someone. And I'm hoping no matter what software you use, we have to communicate across the different levels of healthcare, because that's where the residents are falling through the cracks. Yes. One of the things I would like to see also is follow up from all of us that can see the same thing. Like I called the family today as my follow up visit after they left. They did get their O2. They got their wound equipment that they needed or supplies. And then maybe, or if I say they still are not getting wound supplies, maybe you guys could answer back and say, this one was on hold, or we're getting that over to them today or something. So we have that communication even after they leave our facility.
So let's do some maybe further digging into this use case. And I'm going to direct this one at Dania because I know she's the one that's responsible for getting everyone paid. So can you tell us a little bit about the kinds of things that you're, and Tana, from our discussions prior, I know your team is essentially going in whatever capacity they're allowed in to get certain documents to ensure payment. So what are those documents and how diverse is it when it comes to the different buildings you work with?
So it's mainly driven by state Medicaid plans. Some require stats, some require a face-to-face, some require face-to-face again within 6 months. Even after the setup, you still have to go back and get that. Generally at setup, you can dispense with a dispensing order, but you do need to follow up with that prescription that contains all the proper elements as required by CMS, the diagnosis code, the liters per minute, via nasal cannula. If the payer doesn't cover as needed or PRN, that can't be anywhere on the prescription. Even if the patient does use it continuously, you'll find PRNs on those orders. There's that follow-up to clarify, is the patient using this continuous or not? It's a lot of education needs to happen, not only like the facility doctor, just to keep everybody on the same page. And then I wish we had a magical portal that's both systems talk to each other. So when they get a new admit for a new setup, that could be fed over and the system could be programmed to have whatever those specific Medicaid documents are that qualify the patient to bill. It would just save everybody so much time if we could find a way to do that. The Part A stays. That's also important to know. because we're relying on the facility to notify us when those end. So we know it's set up, they're coming on. Sometimes it's a Part A stay, sometimes not.
Part A stay is when Medicare would cover the cost of the device and you would bill the facility?
Correct. Yep. So the skilled part of the stay, so when they, it's that first 100 days or so of their stay at the nursing home, Medicare Part A is the payer. And then once that ends, then Medicare Part B would kick in. But Medicare Part B doesn't cover oxygen. It's statutorily non-covered in a SNF. So that's when it would be the Medicaids. So that's why I'm speaking to the Medicaids.
And so from your business operation standpoint, you probably frequently bill Medicare and they say, no, check your eligibility, time's up, because you're relying on the data point to come from the facility. Or you do what?
Or we bypass Medicare altogether if the payer allows it.
Okay. Rather than looking for the denial first before you go, you check down to the second one. Got it. Very interesting. There is some number of documents that might include the reference to the oxygen being ordered or other item that you guys might distribute. Oftentimes it's not complete. So it'll just say this person needs oxygen and they might get some of the measurements, but not everything you would need for it to be compliant. So there might be some back and forth on that. What I know of different EHRs in the skilled nursing area, there's also a variety of customization options. One document in one area might be a different one if you're working with a different facility, as mentioned, in some cases, even within the same operation. Tana, I think you mentioned a couple of the examples, or maybe one of your other members of your team I spoke to, but there's some different things that you've trained them to do at this point to try and get a hold of these documents effectively as they go in. Can you go through some of those?
We literally had to train these poor drivers on what to ask for when they're in the facility. So if they do see that a patient, for instance, is on oxygen, we had to train them to ask for face sheet, chart notes, and the prescription, that kind of thing. And the poor drivers are like, listen, we don't even know what that is. So there was just a little bit of education involved in that, just to show them, this is what you're looking for. This is what it's called, specific keywords to use when asking for those documents from the facilities, which really isn't in their wheelhouse. And I'm grateful that they're willing to do it, but that's the kind of thing that we wish we didn't have to do.
At 1,100 buildings that you service, yeah. Like you said at the beginning, that's the time that you're spending doing that adds up, certainly.
Right.
When payday comes around. Okay. So let's shift gears a little bit here. I'm going to bring it back to Chris. And Chris, I'm going to ask you to put a different hat on than your current role working within the skilled nursing area. But some of the past experience you have working in home care, which did have some adjacencies to HME. Can you just talk a little about the challenges that home health providers face as they're coordinating between nursing, skilled nursing, as well as HME at the same time?
I really think it's exactly the same thing, except you have more people involved. Usually you're doing most of that because you're out in the field or in the building. You might have somebody like social service or somebody doing it. I think it's the same struggles of getting the information. And I think listening to them talk, depending on whatever software you use, I think if we had standard forms, if they're state forms, those could be set up to be filled out in the system and sent over. And also the communication of demographics, it sounds like the payers when they change and that kind of thing, at least having them have access to be able to look at their patients in there. And you can do that right now by just asking us for access, but it would be great if it just showed up for you. So I think the struggles are the same on both ends. The home care I worked for, we actually had our own DME company. So that was real easy if the patient picked that one, because I could just come back to the office and say, okay, this is what I need and this is where I need it and when. But whenever they're picking from a giant list of providers, it might be somebody you hardly ever deal with. You don't have all those ducks in a row like you might with your major supplier. So I think there's struggles on both ends. This is where it needs to all tie together. We all need to work together.
I really liked your point that if you're in the home care space or the home health space, you have the same problem except for more, because you're coordinating with the facility, but you're also still coordinating with that physician wherever they might be. So there's you just added a different circle without taking anybody away.
Different levels of nurses that are trying to do it too. So usually exactly. In a building, in a SNF, you have certain people that do this. Now you've got 25 nurses out there all trying to do it, and they're not as skilled sometimes.
Frequently. Too.
Constantly changing.
Okay, so let's bring it back to a topic I briefly touched on. We look at these challenges, right? As mentioned, there's not really any reimbursement behind any of them per se, or any specific incentives either, other than doing the right thing and caring for patients, which is certainly a strong incentive for most people involved.
Nice one thing with that, Chris,
for an incentive.
That is obviously the patient. That's our first goal. But preventing return to hospitals. And that's going to affect the hospital and the SNF. I don't know how it affects home care at this point, but if we coordinate this, we're all getting less stars and everything's just bad if we don't do a good job.
And that kind of penalties you can incur from the high rehospitalization rates intrinsically hit the smaller organizations, which will always be the post-acute organizations, much harder than they would hit the hospital, where the margins are higher and the bottom lines are generally not as well. Get the idea.
On the back end, you're going to get trouble money-wise because of the things that you're not doing correctly.
Absolutely. So the question I wanted to get to, and what regulatory or reimbursement changes do you think could encourage better coordination? And we can keep it very broad or high level. And I think, Chris, you've noted a couple existing things that should really be motivating everybody. But even so, those are mostly sticks. So what do you guys think should be or could be enacted to try and encourage better coordination between these providers?
I think them broadening that everybody should be using this healthcare disciplines throughout our journey. If I was a patient, I would want everyone to talk to each other easily and not have to try to dig for information. That's my point of view.
All right. Yeah. Tana and Danny, any kind of final comments on the general challenges and areas we might be able to see successes or improvement?
Yeah. I think the relationship needs to be stronger between facility and clinician and HME to capture all that we need.
Excellent.
And I would just say the technology to bridge the gap between the two systems to automate it would be ideal.
All right, welcome back, Jim.
All right, well, outstanding. I hope everybody's enjoyed this webinar as much as I have. And we'd like to give our special thanks once again to Chris Lukesic, Tana Wright, Dania Falstrom, and Chris Puglisi for shedding light on making post-acute care journey better for everyone involved, quite frankly. We look forward to seeing you again. This is Jim Berkland for McKnight's, wishing you good health and outstanding days ahead.
That concludes the latest episode of the Post Acute Point of View podcast. We have a lot of guests and topics coming up that you won't want to miss, so be sure to subscribe. To learn more about Matrix Care and our solutions and services, visit matrixcare.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you for listening. Be well, and we'll see you next time.